Welcome to Let's Talk Legal, part of Coastal Daybreak every Tuesday morning and brought to you by Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. You can call in now to have your legal questions answered by attorneys Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Call in now with your questions at 252-247-7282.
And welcome to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, the right advice at the right time. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Happy holiday.
Ben, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year, because this will be our last one of the, this year.
Next Tuesday Christmas and the following Tuesday New Year's.
Yeah, that's right. So what are we talking about today?
Ben, last week we talked about defining a trust.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Mm-hmm.
And and made our listeners aware that there just are so many different types of trust.
Mm-hmm.
So let's continue that topic generally this morning. Wes is here with us, and he will chime in. But let's come at it a little bit different direction. Let's say that Wes and I, which is a common occurrence, have a client that comes in and says, Wes, I am in a second marriage. I'm very happy in my marriage. We've been married about 7 or 8 years, but I've got children from a prior marriage. And obviously, I want to provide for my wife, but upon her death, I would like for my net worth to go back to my children.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's say that a client comes in and says, you know, Cecil, I love my kids. I've got three of them. But my youngest son, I mean, if I give him a third of my estate, a few $100,000 or whatever it will be, it's just going to be gone in a heartbeat. What can I do about that? I'm very concerned about my son receiving his inheritance outright.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Another scenario. Wes, I am in a situation where I have any number of family assets, a family farm, a beach house, different things that I really don't want to be sold if
mm-hmm.
I die. I want these to remain in the family for my children and for my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
We meet at the beach cottage every single year and have for so many years, and we want to put into place some sort of structure whereby this family gathering place stays in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ben, all three of those examples are examples of people where they're giving us their facts, their circumstances, and they may or may not realize that at the time that they're doing it, they are really asking for a trust.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And as I said last week, a trust is an agreement between three people, three parties, if you will. It doesn't have to be people. It can also be a company, a corporation, but three parties.
Mm-hmm.
There's the grantor, the creator of the trust, sometimes called a settlor. There's the trustee who holds the property for the benefit of the beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the creator, the settlor, the trustee, and the beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's a contractual agreement between the trustee and the grantor that the property in the trust will be held for the benefit of another, meaning for the benefit of the beneficiary.
Right, right.
It's a useful tool for we lawyers. I have also said on this program, and I know that Wes agrees, that you know, we listen carefully to our clients and to what their objectives happen to be. And if they don't need a trust, then let's don't utilize a trust.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need to utilize a trust just to, for instance, in the state of North Carolina, avoid probate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
We need to find some trump cards of some very significant valid reasons
mm-hmm.
to support the preparation of a trust. It doesn't have to be overly expensive, and it doesn't have to be overly burdensome. It's just that, you know, if the facts don't support the use of a trust, then in the law, Wes and I and
mm-hmm.
all, I think most lawyers, you know, keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
you know, let's try
right.
to keep it simple if we can. And so this is kind of where we come from today
mm-hmm.
in terms of talking to our listeners.
And as you have taught us before, the trust is its own separate legal entity. Isn't that correct?
It is. It's own tax ID number, so on and so forth. You really don't get the tax ID number from a practical standpoint until it's funded. In many cases, you have trusts that are called a, basically referred to as a pour over type trust. And what that means is that basically you hold whatever the assets are that you have during your lifetime in your name, and then through your will, then your will pours over into the trust. So we're really not, we really aren't utilizing the trust document, you know, until the death. But sometimes there's trust that we use that we fund during lifetime. It just depends on what the circumstances are.
Well, there's two words that we haven't really talked about that are sometimes hard to pronounce, revocable and irrevocable.
Right, right. An irrevocable trust, really, it can take all different types of, you know, shapes and sizes, but basically there's some limitations on revoking it and on amending it and or making changes to it. And a revocable trust, you really have a little bit more, well, really complete control with regard to amendment, modification, those type things.
Yeah, so it all is flexible to fit the client's needs, right?
Right, just depends on the circumstances. You know, I wasn't here last week. I was in a trial, and one of the things about that case was a situation where a gentleman presented at our office with certain desires, and the certain desire was that, you know, he was married, second marriage, children from a previous marriage, and he had a child, and his desires were pretty typical. I want to provide for my spouse if I die, and then but I do want what I have to then pass to my side of the equation, to my child, not her children. Well, as Cecil mentioned a moment ago, you know, it's something, trusts are things that are useful, things that we can use to help achieve the goals of a client. Well, when a client sits down with an attorney who practices in this area and has these kind of wishes, in order to accomplish those goals, there's really no other way to do it than to use this tool that we have in our toolbox called a trust.
Right.
You know, what are we going to do here? Let's talk out loud about that. Are we going to just leave everything to the spouse and hope that she makes arrangements for the whatever the asset is to go back to the child?
Right.
No, because pretty high likelihood that that won't happen, or her daughters or her children, so on and so forth, will get involved.
Right.
Are we going to do kind of I love you wills where she leaves everything to me and I leave everything to her, and meaning the I being the person who presented our office, in hopes that, you know, her will doesn't get changed. No, these are all the kind of things where if you don't use a trust, you're kind of setting yourself up for one of two things. Number one, either your desires really are not going to be met, or you're setting yourself up for the possibility of some type of dispute regarding an estate, which gets to be, as we know, can be very expensive
and lengthy,
tough on the family. All kind of negatives with regard to that. So, you know, the standard planning in that type of situation, Ben, and I must say that that is a pretty common thing we hear. I mean, there's more second, third marriages, I think, now than probably ever, at least in the 20 years I've been practicing.
And a lot of older people that live together and don't get married that want to protect the assets, too.
And in that situation, where they've decided, made a decision together, you know, that they're not going to necessarily get married. They still want to provide, many times, their home place for their companion.
Exactly.
I have a lot of files like that. And the gentleman says, you know, we're not married. We're very happy. We got kids from prior marriage. But now if something happens to me, I want Mary to have a place to live. Can she have a life estate? So that's similar to a trust.
But so, there's a big problem with that in that scenario we were just talking about. Let's say under that scenario that what we're what we do or what we eventually end up with is giving the spouse, this is the second wife with the children from a previous marriage, a life estate or what we oftentimes hear lifetime rights in the home, so that she can live there, you know, for the rest of her life. Well, upon the death of the husband in this scenario, she would have a right to what's called an elective share, as we talked about.
Right.
If the marriage has been 15 years or more, that's 50% of the total net assets.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't use a trust there, which we can fund with the elective share amount and keep that asset in the trust, but then the asset goes back to the natural child of the client. So if we don't do that, then we're in a situation where there's no way we can achieve this client's goal, or certainly guarantee we're achieving this client's goal, because we leave the life estate, but then for a 6-month period of time, the surviving spouse would have a right to claim the elective share, which would be half of everything that he owns. And then that comes into her name.
Right.
And then where does that half go upon her death? Probably not back to the natural child, probably to her children. So using a trust in that scenario is really the only way to reach the client's goals. So that is that's a prime example of things that we deal with on a daily basis. And without the tool in the toolbox, as I often say, in order to accomplish the goal with regard to, you know, providing for the spouse, which is a very common interest, and then the asset, however, then staying on that lineage, that same family line upon her death, without a trust, you can't accomplish that.
We'll have more to come in a moment. If you'd like to ask your question, 247-7282. You can reach us right now at 247-7282, 252 area code, and ask your questions of Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. What else are we talking about?
Ben, one of the things that's important that we tell clients when we do hear their facts and circumstances, and their facts and circumstances seem to fit within the need of a trust agreement, is that we then, as the lawyer, have to guide that client through what I might call contingency planning. I mean, a trust is the ultimate disposition of the property. So what if one of the beneficiaries die? What if the purpose of the trust is no longer needed, or no longer legitimate, if you will, not so much legitimate, the applicable, applicable. I mean, for instance, a trust for a minor child. Okay, it's applicable when the child is 10 years old, 15 years old, 18 years old. But when the child becomes 25 years old, is it still applicable? And the answer probably is that it is not. So it's very important that the drafter of the trust, who of course would be the lawyer, is going to address the contingencies with the client, not only with regard to beneficiaries and whether they're living and what happens if they die. Another very important contingency is the successor trustee language. I mean, trustees are many times, or a lot of times, people. Do we have a caller? Are people. And of course, we people are not eternal. And what if John is no longer living? Then who becomes the trustee? That's a contingent provision. And who becomes the trustee after John and after David and after Sue? So there needs to be a formula in a well-drafted trust to have a plan of action relative to the appointment of a successor trustee. Very important in a trust agreement, because a trust by nature, Ben, unlike an estate has an opening and a closing. I mean, an estate opens, and within a reasonable amount of time, it's closed.
But a trust can go on.
A trust lingers on year after year after year. That's not a bad thing. That's what the clients needed. That's what they desired. That's what meets their objectives. But as time is, the reality of time is that sometimes we lose people. So we lose a trustee. We need a successor trustee. We lose a beneficiary. We need successor beneficiaries.
So what if there's a failure to consider this successor planning.
Right.
Kind of sounds like succession planning, but a successor planning. Who's mm-hmm. going to be my next trustee, executor, mm-hmm. that type thing, or even who's going to be the beneficiary or legatee of my estate in the event that, you know, a child has died or whatever. If it's a failure to do that,
right,
then you end up in almost every situation without a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's think about that a minute. Okay, if you don't have a trustee because you didn't name a successor, who names your trustee? The court.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't name a successor beneficiary or legatee because your primary recipient of your estate predeceased you, or the two of them or three or whatever it may be, then who decides where your estate goes?
Mm-hmm.
The state. Intestate succession.
Right. Wow.
So it's very important. I think that's probably the number one thing when we sit down with clients that they respond to by saying, oh, I didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens if so-and-so dies? What happens if you know, one of your children passed away? Do you want their share to pass to their children, your grandchildren?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you just want
to stay within that line?
The estate to go, right, let's see, to the other surviving child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to have those conversations. And I would say that, again, that's like at the top of the list of the thing that when you sit down with the client and they've thought about everything, but they haven't thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times folks just don't like thinking about a child dying before them, of course, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid. So a lot of times the clients will get answers to every single question about who's going to be in this spot and who's going to be in that spot. But then they've got to go back and kind of think and then call you about mm-hmm. the successor positions or these contingency, as Cecil said, positions, because they just got to sit down, maybe talk with their spouse about it and think about those things. But it's very important to do it because we certainly can't. I mean, my goodness, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know
mm-hmm.
the twists and turns of life that are ahead of us. We don't know, you know, who's going to have a health issue, who's going to pass away. I mean, obviously, we don't know these things. So
mm-hmm.
the best time to take care of those things is when you're sitting down with the client, having the discussion, and get it right and think through it, and then move on.
Mm-hmm.
Then we don't have to think about it tomorrow for a
right.
while, you know.
Right.
But let's get it right while we're sitting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The trustee may not die, Ben, but may be unable,
mm-hmm.
may become very sick or infirm, if you will. And so the language, the contingency language, would read something to the effect of, if my trustee John becomes unable,
mm-hmm.
incapacitated, or dies, then the following person would be named as trustee. Very important that we address this contingent language with the client.
Or if they resign.
Correct.
No,
sometimes
right.
they don't
yep.
want to serve.
Sometimes
right.
they resign.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if you have trusts that are designed to be long lasting, one like a land trust, and is there a mechanism that you can put in where the trustee actually chooses his successor, because it may be generations.
Yes, that many times is in the formula
mm-hmm.
that the then existing trustee
mm-hmm.
can appoint a successor trustee.
Okay.
Because they're unable, unwilling, incapacitated, and they have the authority to appoint a successor trustee. That's a lot of times the way that the trusts are written, where a spouse
mm-hmm.
is the trustee. The husband gives the wife the right. She may be the initial trustee, but gives her the right to appoint a successor trustee. My wife shall have the right to appoint a successor trustee.
Okay. Well, more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvey Allen Collins. If you'd like to ask your questions, there's still time. 247-7282. 252-247-7282. And we're back for about four more minutes or so with the folks from Harv Ellen Collins Attorneys at Law, the right advice at the right time. Of course, you can find them online at harvellencollins.com, where you can also listen to past shows as well, too. So let's take a look at the wrapping up this subject.
What are we talking about? You know, Ben, we really are in the last minute or two, and ironically, the last minute or two of the 2018.
That's right, the year.
So Wes and
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Absolutely. And we wish all our listeners the best. We have some real loyal folks who tune in here every Tuesday morning, and we appreciate that greatly. We appreciate our community where we live and all the great clients that are here that support us, and we're glad to be able to practice law in the state of North Carolina and the counties of Carteret, Craven, Pamlico, Onslow, all of those great counties. Last but not least, you know, Ben, we always say this time of year, it really is time, you know, while your family is around, make sure your affairs are in order. Don't keep putting off that power of attorney, that health care power of attorney, updating your last will and testament. I promise you, listeners, if you'll just pull them out and look at them, I bet you 9 times out of 10, there's something in those documents that's not still up to date. Look at those contingency provisions. You parents that did the wills when your children were small, you named your brother and sister as executor because your children were 12 years old.
Right.
Now your children are 25 years old. Okay. And they could be the executor to the exclusion of your sibling. So look through your documents at this time of year. Go through them with your family.
Yeah. Have the conversation as well. You know, family comes together for Christmas and the holidays, and it's a good idea. Sometimes awkward because folks, some families don't like talking about finances, but you know, I can tell you from the backside of it where we're dealing with estates and things, and we really don't know what's going on because there's never been a conversation in the family. And maybe the parent has, their health has deteriorated to the point where we can't get the information from them anymore. It sure is wonderful to have a child or children who are in the know. So I would encourage the parents out there to be somewhat transparent with your kids about these things. You don't have to tell them about everything, but
just
maybe
let them know where to find it.
Let them know where to find it.
Where's the safety deposit box key?
And kids, you know, get the courage up to at least have a little conversation, you know, so life is a little easier in dealing with these, inevitable type things we have to deal with, you know, at some point in time. So this time of year is on our program. We do mention it around Thanksgiving, Christmas. You know, let's just do those things so that we kind of a little bit more of an open book with regard to the financial situation of the family. Makes things easier later on.
Yeah, and once again, it gets to that idea that you can have some things that are settled. Not everything will be thrown up in the air, and you're not calling on somebody to put out the fire, which you guys are often are called to do, is to put out the fires.
That's right. Yeah. And like you said, you know, if the response of the parents is something like, we don't want to get into any of that, or they're the type that's just, this is our business, you know, every family's different. That's fine. But like you said, Ben, I totally agree with this. Just give us an idea of maybe who the lawyer is. You know,
where's the stuff?
Where's the stuff? Where do you keep your important papers? Those type things. Okay. Just so we can get to the account statements, we can get to the life insurance policies, we can get to wherever the will may be, the power of attorney, the healthcare power of attorney. In the event that we need any of these things, we've got them, but they don't do us much good unless we can find them.
Y'all have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you.
We'll see you in 2019.
Thanks, Ben.
This is Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station.